You are listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. I'm your host, NTSC, and welcome to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we're against so very much, what do we stand for? Well, the ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing the fact that none of us today are truly free. Having said all that, even though the device to which you're listening right now wasn't free, the radio waves to which you're listening are. WXRW does cost money to operate, however. So to that end, you can always visit the station at 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and purchase a hat or a mug or a t-shirt, and all the proceeds will go directly to supporting the station. Or if you like any of the programming that you listen to on WXRW, please reach out and become an official underwriter. Every little bit helps. Now you can also dial in to River West Radio on your smart speaker of choice. Just tell your listening device at home to play WXRW River West Radio. We're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I recently had the opportunity to videotape a conference for a local nonprofit here in Milwaukee. It serves a very specific population, namely women who are currently or who have been incarcerated, or women who have been involved in the criminal justice system in some way. The organization does some really important work, and the conference was really very, very interesting, and I'm really glad that I got to help. So the conference itself featured a series of speakers who really all excel in their fields, and all of whom work with women who've been disenfranchised and marginalized in some sense. And then due to the nature of the work and the populations of women most in danger of experiencing exploitation, homelessness and incarceration, the speakers and the organizations they represent work primarily with women of color, queer women, and trans women. The conference concluded with a luncheon and a keynote speaker from another nonprofit working in response to the spread of HIV and AIDS in communities of color. The keynote speaker's talk was especially interesting for various reasons, while the entire experience kind of gave me the idea for this week's episode. So this is going to be kind of a report back from the event with my reactions and thoughts on the work that the organizers and the presenters are engaged in within the communities that they serve. And I want to emphasize that I think everyone involved has their heart in the right place. And I also recognize that usually that sentence or sentences like that, are used in a belittling or patronizing way. And I don't intend that at all. Because these organizations are legally recognized nonprofits and they have to function that way, these organizations and their representatives all need to operate very pragmatically and within very rigid guidelines, as well as under just very heavy scrutiny from various sundry federal oversight committees and stuff like that, blah, blah, blah. And because they're all seeking grants and underwriting and financial support, that's all aimed at being as tax deductible as possible. They need to work within the realities of this kind of economic prison, so to speak. So one of the phrases that got used a lot over the course of the five-hour event was the term root causes. The presenters, admirably wanted as much as possible for the institutions for which they work to recognize and address root causes of the issues that they all faced, instead of focusing their time and efforts on shallow symptoms and the periphery and such. So my thesis for this episode is simply this: because these well-meaning, dedicated people and their organizations work within the confines of the legal nonprofit system, they are unlikely to actually recognize, and they are incapable of actually addressing and tackling the real root causes of the problems facing the populations they serve. While I'm being critical of the event and the methods of the presenters and their organizations as a whole, I really want to emphasize that I am in awe of their motivations and the Herculean amount of organizing and communicating and cooperating that goes into the work that they do on a daily basis. And I really want to commend them for fighting what is a very necessary fight and for dedicating their lives to serving those less fortunate and privileged than themselves. I was actually kind of surprised by some of the terminology that I heard used. For example, harm reduction and structural violence are finally getting some recognition in the nonprofit world. And I think that, you know, if nothing else, that's a good sign. So the conference specifically dealt with women who, for various reasons, find themselves engaging in prostitution as a means to support themselves and usually their families as well. And the topic of prostitution is one of those polarizing discussions that we have in our society. But every presenter approached the issue from a harm reduction stance, which I thought was great. And really all that means is the tactics employed by any organization, specifically these organizations, were all primarily focused on reducing the negative consequences associated with the behaviors of the women that they served. Despite the fact that those behaviors are illegal in this system. So an example of harm reduction is a clean needle exchange program. Such a program doesn't seek to chastise drug users or jail them or even to break the cycle of their addiction. A needle exchange program recognizes harm that is being done to the people whose drug of choice is injectable, you know, by some means, and seeks simply to reduce that harm by providing clean, safe needles where a user might be pressured by the situations in which they find themselves to reuse or share needles, leading to the spread of infection and bloodborne pathogens such as HIV. Harm reduction programs face the issues they wish to address by meeting a human need. Harm reduction typically takes the stance that many of the problems facing marginalized communities are public health issues, and prostitution can definitely be viewed through a public health lens, as many of the presenters chose to do so to better serve the women with whom they work. Another noble cause championed by one of the presenters was the Housing First movement, which is also, in a sense, a harm reduction movement. Housing First seeks to address chronic homelessness by providing free, safe, personal housing to the individuals most affected by chronic homelessness. The organizations seeking to implement Housing First initiatives work with governments on a local and a state level to find available housing and then typically get, you know, grants or vouchers to pay for the housing, just, you know, to get those chronically homeless people off the streets. And really the numbers show categorically that Housing First decreases homelessness and crime, obviously, while also drastically reducing the number of ER visits, for example, to area hospitals and clinics, and improving any given client's chances of attaining long-term permanent housing and therefore quantifiable life improvement. And all that, I say, duh. Duh. You know, who knew that providing safe, free housing to someone who is suffering on the streets could dramatically improve their living conditions? The presenter was very passionate that permanent personal housing was the solution to homelessness, and I obviously agree fundamentally. I would argue that the stress of obtaining and maintaining housing is actually something that lessens the quality of everyone's life kind of across the board, whether or not you suffer from chronic homelessness. Whether you've been in the same home for a decade does not minimize the fact that you stress about maintaining your housing. You stress about your rent, or you stress about your mortgage, or you stress about your lease, or whatever it is. Unless you're independently fabulously wealthy, my guess is you stress and that your life is made worse by the stress involved with obtaining and maintaining permanent housing. So the presenter stated that the root cause of chronic homelessness is the lack of housing. But the numbers would disagree with him. We'll go back a few years. There was a study. In 2010, there were approximately 19 million vacant homes sitting unsold on the American marketplace. And in the same year, 2010, there were approximately 3 million homeless families in need of permanent housing. So that means that empty houses outnumbered the homeless 6-1, and roughly continued to do so to this day in 2018. Yet, obviously, all those millions, tens of millions of homes remain vacant and unused, and they're held in the hands of banks waiting to capitalize on those assets. And that's a great example of structural violence. There are more than enough homes to house every family in this country. That is not the issue. The root cause of chronic homelessness is the simple fact that housing is a commodity that must be purchased, leased, or rented in this system of supply and demand as it exists today. So that just means every day, millions of families are denied the simple human dignity of housing because they cannot afford it. They can't make rent. And they certainly would never be approved for a home loan. The fact that any human must labor for the right to a home, for me personally, is mind-boggling. Everyone deserves a safe place to live. Just as I believe everyone deserves healthy food, clean water to drink, and air to breathe. And yet those things are all held behind paywalls every day for everyone. The question and answer segment of the initial panel was really very telling to me that the organizations represented were sadly incapable or unwilling to actually address the real root causes of prostitution, which again was the primary focus of this conference. When these organizations ask the larger question of why do women turn to prostitution to earn a living, the answers that they find are varied. Well, the women we work with are homeless, so they turn to prostitution. Well, the women we work with are addicted to drugs and alcohol, so they turn to prostitution. And I can't help but think that all of those things are nothing more than continued symptoms of the larger system and not in any way the true root cause of prostitution. They're not the root cause as to why these women turn to that as their last resort. One anonymous question asked of the panel during the Q&A section addressed the men who are purchasing sex on the market. The question asked, how can we change those men to reduce the demand for sex work, and thus by reducing the demand, reduce the needed supply of sex workers? So this question, the person asking this question wanted the market to do the work for us, right? The invisible hand of the market could solve prostitution by reducing demand. And I just about snapped. Yes, we absolutely live in a culture of sexual violence towards women, and men are the primary culprits of that violence by a very, very, very large, undeniable margin. But no, the market cannot solve this issue, for it is the market that is the perpetrator of the structural violence that coerces women to enter into sex work. I feel required here to kind of add a little addendum. Yes, there are women who enter into sex work willingly as a career because they love it. There are women for whom sex work is empowering and rewarding, and those women tend to be paid very handsomely for their efforts and for their training and for their experience and for their skill set. And of course, it is not those women that this conference was addressing. It's not those women these nonprofits work with to find them housing and resources and to get them out of the violence that they find themselves in. The conference was addressing the scores of women who enter into sex work because they see it as the only option left to them, or they are coerced into it, or they're outright trafficked into it. Women who would not have chosen sex work if they had any other recourse. In Capital, Karl Marx defines the concept of a commodity, and we're all familiar with that. You know, a good or a service is a commodity. The money commodity is the evolutionary kind of manifestation of the analog for everything. You know, an amount of the money commodity can be a stand-in for literally any other commodity. And we talked very briefly about that in our past episode on power, that any universally adopted, recognized currency can be used to coerce because it acts as a stand-in, analogous kind of to life itself. If you have money, you are allowed to live. The market incentivizes the commodification of everything. So bottled safe drinking water in a world of, you know, continued poisoned rivers and streams and reservoirs, our personal data gets commodified and monetized by the service providers that we use. Our intellectual property, our thoughts and ideas, commodified for sale to the highest bidder. Our labor hours, the minutes of our finite lives, sold to our employers for scant wages delimited by the market. And our bodies. And society doesn't like that for whatever puritanical, you know, historically misogynist reason. But bodies are commodified endlessly. Models on television and in print ads commodify their bodies every day and must maintain a certain visual appeal or risk losing their livelihood. And that's seen as acceptable by our society, you know, if not kind of vain and shallow. And that's obviously a ridiculous double standard, just intended to further disenfranchise women. But that's a topic for another show. So the point is, our bodies are already seen as commodities by the unfeeling market. Ergo, there was no evolution, right? There's no timeline of the development of capitalism that would not inherently, unavoidably create sex work as a commodity. There will always and forever be a demand for sex because it is an inherent chemical, hormonal desire in most of the population. There are men willing to exploit, coerce, and traffic women to earn a profit from the commodity of their bodies. And obviously there are women who feel, you know, coerced to some extent to exploit their own bodies as a commodity to try and get by. The only way you will ever address the issue is not through law enforcement or criminalization or even decriminalization. It is by fundamentally removing the reward of coercing women or trafficking women or exploiting women. It is by providing everyone with the means by which to enjoy a healthy and safe life. The root cause of coercive sex work is the removal of the dangers that face these women: starvation, homelessness, and violence. And the women who enter into sex work, you know, kind of as a last resort, do so because their body is a commodity in this system, whether you like it or not. And they know that they can leverage its value to male clients to earn the money commodity. In a system where everyone is guaranteed safe housing, food, water, and the means by which to self-actualize and pursue their own self-determination by wielding their own power, it would be impossible to coerce anyone into any work they themselves do not wish to engage in. And people don't understand when you view it from that perspective. That means every job that we don't like can be addressed in that way. Because in a sense, we are all whoring ourselves out to somebody. And I know that that risks diminishing the violence and the danger faced by sex workers on a daily basis. And nobody likes the word whore. But that term to me really just means someone who sells their body for a wage. And it's got negative connotations associated with it. But you do that every day. And you might not necessarily utilize your genitals every day to do your job. But make no mistake, you sell your body to your employer for a certain number of hours every week. You use your body to do your job. So fundamentally, your employer rents you for only a few dollars an hour, and you really have no say in the matter. Sure, you could try and negotiate for a higher rate of rental, but I mean, you know, good luck with that. Any HR department is going to be quick to find your replacement if you get too uppity and you start valuing your body hours too much. And of course, you know, proponents of the market would say you can quit and seek out better employment that would, you know, pay a higher rental fee for your body. So you still need to find another group of people to rent your body to. How is that an improvement? Malcolm X was quoted as saying, "If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, that's not progress." If you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio, and I am your host, NTSC. And today we're talking specifically about a conference that I got to videotape recently, put on by a series of nonprofits, all dealing with kind of, you know, in a sense, structural violence towards women. And the conference itself, particularly, was addressing sex work. And all of these institutions were working in various sectors to try and, through a harm reduction stance, address what they saw as a systemic problem of prostitution. And this is kind of a report back, because as much as all of these institutions wanted to address what they saw as root causes, my thesis is simply because of the system in which they are working and their need to get funding and grants, they cannot possibly actually recognize the root causes. And if they do, their hands are tied and they won't be able to actually address them. The best they can do is address peripheral symptoms. A keynote was especially interesting, and I was really pleased to hear the speaker talk about structural violence. However, that was maybe the most disheartening aspect of the whole day. As much as the keynote speaker seemed to recognize that the issue of coercive sex work was based on systemic racism, sexism, and structural violence, her proposed solutions were all framed within the rigid guidelines of the false dichotomy presented to us, you know, in every election cycle. Her solutions were just to vote for better representatives, you know, give them money, donate to campaigns that happen to align with her organization's goals, or say they align with her organization's goals. You know, despite the fact that even her own organization was doing some truly revolutionary things to serve their communities. So, for example, I mentioned the harm reduction tactic of a clean, free needle exchange. Well, her organization specifically runs an illegal clean needle exchange. It's not lawful in the state in which she works to provide free needles to addicts. So what she's doing is very much against the law. But because she knows and recognizes that such a harm reduction tactic immediately addresses real dangers to the public health, and specifically the health of the people that she's trying to help, she boldly, defiantly flies in the face of the law. And I kind of really love her for that. And when she said that her organization runs an illegal, clean, free needle exchange, you know, she got uproarious applause because despite the fact that most of these nonprofits gave lip service to the law enforcement, you know, organizations with whom they work, I think deep down they recognize that the law is the problem. So it was really disheartening that even though she sees firsthand the good, the immediate good that her illegal needle exchange does for the population she's specifically serving, she cannot or just will not take that small, small final step to realizing that all laws, by their nature, are unjust. Laws serve only to maintain the status quo of the haves, you know, versus the have-nots, the gentry versus the peasants. Laws serve nobody but the lawmakers. And as we have gone over in past episodes, there is no law that serves you personally. And the law doesn't pertain to the very rich. There are two criminal justice systems. One for the uber rich and one for everyone else. And there's kind of a third one, as we saw, for specifically disenfranchised communities of color that these organizations are trying to serve. And criminalization of anything will never stop that thing. Sex work very much included. It is only through the meeting of human needs without any limit or qualification that we can truly reduce harm. And it made me really frustrated to see a giant banquet hall full of well-meaning people who were mostly or all unwilling to take that final small step to the realization that it is the system in which they work that was the problem. And any solutions found by working within the rigid guidelines of that system could never affect real, lasting change of any true measure. Thank you all so much for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I've been your host, NTSC, and I will be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our truly awesome shared potential. All past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show can be found on riverwestradio.com. Going forward, as much as you can, I would urge you to help your communities through harm reduction practices. When you see someone in need, please do not call the police on them. Calling of the police is an act of direct violence. Instead, humanize the people in your community by putting yourself in their shoes and recognize that the system in which we all struggle is the problem. It's pitting us against each other, and that is a totally unnatural separation. We are the same. We are the same people. I am you and you are me, and it sounds really tree huggery, but it's the absolute truth. And the faster we realize that the person out on the street in need of a home and in need of protection and in need of help, sooner we realize that we are them and they are us, the faster we'll begin moving towards real solutions.